The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where this week, as every week, we are getting you the information, inspiration, and people you need to start or build your own real estate investing business. Today's an exciting day in the world of real estate because this evening is the monthly Summit Help Night on Zoom, which is free to any real estate investor anywhere on the planet. These help nights were kind of on sabbatical in November and December after the National Summit because they fell on the day before Thanksgiving and then on like Christmas Eve during that time. But we are back at it this evening. Help nights do not have a lecture. What they have is people who are knowledgeable about a particular topic who are there to answer questions. And tonight the topic is around land trusts and entities. So anything about land trust corporations, LLCs, maybe even some IRA stuff would be what you would be learning about by coming with your questions. Our guest tonight to help with the Vina's going to be any help. They are there to answer the questions because they are the experts, include John Heyer, Scott Ellsworth, and Todd Van Meter. You can get your free link to join up for tonight and all the help nights for the year at CincinnatiREIA.com. That's CincinnatiREIA.com. While you're there, you might want to check out this Saturday's all-day Saturday workshop. It's about how to get 0% owner financing when you buy houses. And the instructor for that is me. And it's very inexpensive whether you are a member or not. If you are, it's $47. If you're not, it's $97. And it's a 9-3 online event. Again, CincinnatiREIA.com would be the place where you would sign up for that. Our topic tonight is it's real estate. It's just not the kind of real estate we are used to talking about, which is I'm going to go find a property I like and I'm going to buy it and I'm going to rehab it. What we're going to talk about tonight is the idea of, well, if you can't find anything you like to buy and rehab, maybe you could build it instead. This is a direction that more and more real estate investors have been taking as the market has heated up and there's been more availability of people to buy the resulting property or rent the resulting property. And so I have rounded up two folks from different parts of the country who actually do slightly different things to answer all of your questions about land development and new construction when you are a little guy, not a giant builder. You can ask your questions. They can't call in, can they, Mike? Because we've got two different guests on two different phone lines. So you are not going to be able to call in tonight. You are going to need to send your questions to VinaRadio@gmail.com, VinaRadio@gmail.com, and remember to tell us where you are writing from. My first guest is Doug Simpson from Nashville, Tennessee. Met him a couple of weeks ago. Well, I met him long before this, but I saw him a couple of weeks ago at the RIN meeting while I was down there. He actually started his building career with tree houses back in the day. He's just always kind of loved to build and create things, and build his first new construction home in 2006, but has also done a number of rehabs on existing properties, some of which were turned into rentals, and does his construction business along with his family. My other guest tonight is Mike Fry, who is in the Dayton, Ohio area. Mike has been in real estate since 2004, got into the business of, gosh, Mike, you've had so many lives here. Got into apartments and then got into new construction and then became the president of Greater Dayton REIA in 2023. And that is a position that he still holds today. So, guys, thank you for joining us both by phone, which is going to be maybe a little confusing. Perhaps when you are answering the questions, at least for the first few minutes, you could say, well, this is Mike here and I da 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 da, so that people know who is doing what. So, got the same first question for both of you, and we'll start with Mike. You have both kind of taken this journey from like more traditional real estate investor to constructing your own properties. And Mike, I know that your focus has been more on commercial properties than it has on residential properties. I want to know why. Like, why did you were, I'm sure you were perfectly happy as a rehabber and as an apartment owner. And then at some point, something in you went, no, it would be better or it'd be easier or it'd be more profitable to build. What was it that made that decision for you?
Actually, it was a friend of mine who basically said, I've got 60-some acres, and I don't know what to do with it. And I was like, huh. And I began the process of looking at it to, to turn it into a commercial venture. And from that standpoint, I kind of went through the – basically, this is raw land. This is, there's trees or farmland or something like that, and we began the process of what it would take to get this to happen, to bring it to what people now call shovel ready. That's what you present to somebody who would be building the property. And so my start was how to get the land ready for actual construction.
Okay, so you found somebody with a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem was, I've got all this acreage, but I don't know what to do with it.
Exactly. And not only not know what to do with it, didn't want to know what to do with it because they had another full-time job somewhere else.
Ah, okay.
So the steps, surprisingly enough, the steps to move from raw land to shovel ready is a lot more complicated than I originally thought. First of all, in this case, since the land was already there, but the first one was zoned, what zoning is it? And we were lucky there because it was zoned multi-purpose, even though it was originally farmland.
Mm-hmm.
But the second problem we ran into was that it was in the township, and this particular property is on the edge, right at the edge of the city, going into the township. So the city's literally less than a quarter mile away, but the township is out there. And so we went, hey, we want to build, let's say, a commercial, and the original thought was to build a shopping mall. And the township let us know pretty quickly that they did not have the ability to support that because they had one fire truck and one EMS, and they could not. And I think they had two police officers, so they could not support that. So our move was to then see if the city would help us with that. And they do that by taking the property over from the township. That, of course, takes time.
Mm-hmm.
The other problem we ran into was the street in front of it was a Ohio State route. So we dealt with ODOT. And believe it or not, that is a fairly complicated process because ODOT has exactly some very stiff rules about what they want, and they wanted a traffic light, an intersection, a fairly large intersection, because there's going to be property being built across the street, and we had to pay for that. And let me tell you, traffic intersections are extremely expensive. So one thing to be aware of when you're doing your due diligence, you need to have the ability to bring in architectural topography folks and understand that. The third area, and probably the most area that most people forget about, is that, well, this is farmland. There's no water, there's no electricity, there's no gas, there's no internet. All of those you need for, you know, commercial properties. Let's say the water is a quarter mile away, or let's say the water's, you know, less than that. Let's say the water's 1,000 feet away. Well, plan on many thousands of dollars per foot to bring the water in. So all of these had to be brought in. Money had to be put up front. And one of the questions people ask was, how do you know what you're going to get out of this? Well, this is just basically getting to the point where you're going to bring in the bulldozers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So go ahead. So, after all that explanation, I still have the same question. Why? why would you go through all of this?
Well, because the property was at the outer edge of a growing area. There is literally a Walmart about a mile and a half down the way. There are homes being built across the street, or will be planned to be built across the street. So it made sense to put in a shopping mall or a shopping strip there. We eventually decided not to do that. And decided to go with a store and lock and a multi in the back and in the front to attract some restaurants and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So you saw you thought there's opportunity here, and it's going to be profitable enough at the end of all of this, probably, mm-hmm. to be worth it, and potentially more profitable than other ways that I could be spending my time other than dealing with the Ohio Department of Transportation.
which was a lot of fun, let me tell you. Anyway, ask me all I know about how right lanes are constructed. Unbelievable. Oh, and you have to have an exit lane, too, by the way. And that takes up land. So you're like, oh, okay.
there goes some of our plans.
No, when we originally did the, you know, back to the due diligence part, we originally looked at it. So we said, okay, how many other shopping malls are around there? How many other, you know, and all the ideas were on the table. You know, could we do tiny homes? Could we do something, you know, different? Could we put an office building? Well, office buildings didn't make sense there. What would attract people? How many people go up and down the road every single day? And then since it is a state route, it is a very busy road, because if you have a commercial property, you want to have traffic. I think the biggest thing we had going for us was that it was zoned multi-purpose, so we didn't have to fight. And I have one other deal where we did have to fight local populations because they did not like the traffic that was going to be as a result of our efforts.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, so Doug, same question for you. You know perfectly well that you can buy an existing house and just go rehab it.
Right.
Why start from scratch?
Mine was a little different than most builders, because I came in and had been buying these lots on a hilltop overlooking Nashville that I wanted to create something, and I was trying to buy the whole hilltop. It was about a half-mile loop. So I had been buying these lots and houses on this hill, and they were priced cheap enough that I could do it. Some of them were non-buildable at the time because of water and sewer and issues like that. So I just wanted to create this thing, and there are lots that no other builders wanted. They're at about a 20% grade. The topography was terrible. They're rocks. It's kind of a goat hill. But I could see that I had a vision that you'd have these houses on top of the hill with incredible views. And so it started like that, and I just accumulated all these lots, and then as it went along, just keep pushing the price and trying to make them, you know, worth more and more.
Mm-hmm.
So make better and better product.
Okay, so you guys had this in common, though. You both went, ooh, there's something here.
Yes.
Yeah.
and that ended in you building new houses. Okay. So, or a new property. So, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about this whole process from the development of the land to the building to the problems to the wins and the benefits. If you have questions, please send them via email to vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. My guests today are Mike Fry, who is a commercial developer from Dayton, Ohio, and Doug Simpson, who is a residential developer from Nashville, Tennessee. And they both have in common that their backgrounds were in real estate investing, and then they started to build stuff. And I know that lots of folks have had that thought of, my one rental house has a double lot and it could easily have another house on it. I wonder what I would need to do that. So that is what we are talking about today. You can ask your questions by sending them to vinoradio@gmail.com. So guys, it feels to me like there's two huge steps in ending up with a building. And the first one is the land development.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like the deal could just end there if that part does not go like you expected. And mm-hmm. then the second part is the actual building of the property. Now Mike told us a lot about some of the things he went through on the land development on his deal. Doug, can you add to that from your residential perspective? Like, how do you decided to buy your land because there was a bunch of it available and you had a vision about what could be there in terms of you and whatnot. But sort of the same questions, if you were buying someplace to build, would you do research about, I don't know, demographics? How would you know what the demand was for a house that you would build? What due diligence would you do?
Well, I've learned a lot along the way, and I've talked to a lot of other builders. They don't typically do it the way I did it, and that wasn't unusual. But they're looking for flatter lots, easier to build on. The area is very important. School systems are important, and definitely the location. Mine's in a fairly good location in Nashville. School systems aren't as great, but we're in a price range, $1.7 million around there. So it's a lot of people in that price range are going to private school and charter school. So that's a little better. Or they may not have children. In some of our houses, they're all three stories with a basement, things like that, because they're on such steep slopes. But, yes, trying to find a good location, trying to get a good value on the land where you can come out and make a profit. You have to understand all your budgets and everything, all the costs that are associated with it. There's a lot of gotchas, and you can get along and go to the codes department and find out you can't do what you were trying to do. Something changes, like they may not want stormwaters may change. There's a lot more codes involved as time goes by, so there's a lot of things to think about.
Well, and I can tell you in Cincinnati, a lot of our most desirable lots would overlook the river, overlook the Ohio River, which means they are up on a hilltop and generally on a ridge. And there are some pretty strict restrictions about whether you can build, and if so, what kind of other improvements to land you need to make on those ridges, because
right.
They're what's called environmental quality districts.
Right.
Because you take the top off the hill and the trees off the hill and it rains real hard and then the whole hill washes down
yeah.
into the road. So I'm sure that's a piece of it as well. So question for both of you. It sounds like all of this due diligence probably is pretty time consuming. Like, you're not going to get it done in 30 days that you have to close. How do you handle that? Like, I don't, it seems like a catch 22. I don't want to buy the land unless I know that I can build on it. But on the other hand, it might take me a really long time to know that I can build on it. So how do you handle that?
I mean, the first step on my end is going to codes, and it's not an easy process. You don't just walk in. I was there yesterday, in fact, and it's hard to get an appointment sometimes. Nashville has made it a little simpler lately. They changed the way they do business, so they've made it better, and that's a good thing. But you don't typically go in and get an answer that minute. You have to go to multiple departments to get answers on multiple things. So it's a process.
Okay, but so do you put the piece of land under contract first so that you're not wasting your, like, because, I mean, it could get sold while you were doing all this due diligence, or the seller could figure out that you'd done all this due diligence and discovered it was buildable. Now he thinks his lot's worth three times as much money because nobody ever did that before.
Yeah.
Well, there's if it's not like my first project there where it was already a bought property, you still form a relationship with whoever owns it. And if it's something you're buying, you could do some sort of option or form a relationship with the person buying, rather than just saying, look, I'm going to give you all this money for this property before I want. There's a number of ways to make it not cost up front. You may seller financing. It may be something as simple as a partnership with the person. What do they want out of it? Or just say, look, I'm going to do this, but I'm going to give you so much money down, but I'm going to get that money back if 6 months from now it proves, or 3 months or whatever it is they agree to, it proves it's not going to work. And then, of course, you get to keep something for the thing. But in the commercial side, 6 months is minimum. I mean, it's usually, it could be a year, year and a half, to get the shovel ready. So yeah.
Yep.
Doug, did you want to add something to that?
I agree. And mine were different. Like I said, I had already purchased all my lots, so I had to go in and find out what will they let me do now. And I'm always pushing that. I'm always trying to get bigger and more, and you know what typical developers do. You want to get as many square feet on that lot as you think you can sell at the best price. So if you build a real, you know, if you have a certain size lot and you build a small house, you're just not going to make as much money on it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, in retrospect, Doug, would you do it that way again? Would you buy the lots first, or would you like option them and then make sure that you could do what you wanted to do?
I probably would do it different. It's just I had this vision and I didn't think it through. It's turned out great, but I mean, I would probably do it differently if I was telling somebody else how to do it, because I've learned from a lot of other builders.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably wiser to do it another way, but it's worked out because I bought them so cheap so long ago.
What I keep hearing you guys say over and over again is there are a lot of dealings.
Yes, there are.
With the city and the utility departments and the possibly the highway department. And is that the biggest gotcha in the land development process? Is that where you're going to find your, oh, nope, turns out we absolutely can't do this because there's a rare tree frog on this land?
All of those are potentials. I did have some mentors in this, and one of the things that I was informed of fairly early on was that if I could get through this, if I could get this property to shovel ready, and I did all my due diligence, there's a guy out of Texas who says, I'll take it. As long as you get it to there, as long as you get through all the politics, the bureaucracy, and all that stuff, you get all that done, and it's shovel ready, I'll go ahead and build. I'll take it right off your hands. So it was, helped a little bit in the process, because I knew if I could get it to there, there was a possibility to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one thing that, at least from that standpoint. But boy, Yeah, you can get, in fact, where I live in south of Dayton, somebody wants to build a bunch of homes and wanted to put a Topgolf in. And, boy, you should have seen the citizens that showed up to that meeting. And now they're not, it's not where I'm located, but it's about two, it's a city over. And, wow, there was a lot of vocal citizens there.
Yes, God forbid we should ease the housing crisis by building more houses. No, go ahead and do it, just not where I am. So you just said something that had never occurred to me before, and that is there's potentially a whole separate business, there's a whole separate profit center in not building. In just the land development part, and then having a buyer's list of people who they don't want to do the part you just, it's almost like wholesaling, right? I do all the work in figuring it out and getting it under contract and whatnot, and then somebody else says, hey, here's some money, let me take it from here. That's very interesting.
Well, there are a couple of companies in Nashville that are actually doing all of the process of taking your project from start to finish through the codes and zoning and planning department. And they work with them so closely that they know them and they trust these two different gentlemen. And so they can walk it through pretty quick and they charge a fee. So, that's a business for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in an area that it's hard to get things through, you could also go build out in the country where there are the only restrictions are septic and mm-hmm. getting a soil. Other than that, you can build whatever you want, but there's not as much demand there. So you're not going to, it's just a different scenario.
Interesting. So if you have the tolerance for apparently going from department to department to department to department, getting information and permissions and whatnot, there's a business for you there. If you don't like that part, but you do like the part about putting something there that wasn't there before, there's a part for you there, but you guys have kind of done the whole spectrum. Which side do you find you like better? Do you like building it, or do you like the land development part?
Huh. The land development was interesting. And I got to tell you that the code inspection people, the code people, they don't answer the phone. Sometimes they're there, sometimes they're not. Sometimes you got the wrong paperwork, and you got to make sure you have the right paperwork. Sometimes you don't have the right answer, and so it is challenging. But building, I more understand. I guess maybe that's it. I'm more understanding. It could just come from my background. I mean, my mom and dad built duplexes, and my grandfather was a local home builder, built 30-some homes. So I understand that probably a little bit better. But I got to tell you that the land development was kind of exciting, challenging, irritating.
Yeah, getting chased by a tiger is exciting too. But
And mine didn't have the development part as much. I still had to deal with codes and zoning for different issues like stormwater regulations and, the sizes and the heights. They have a lot of different restrictions. But I personally like the creativity part of building something. All of our houses are different. I think at this point we're going to try to start building them similar, though, just so we can scale up, because we haven't been as profitable as we should because of that individual houses.
No, because you don't have like a cookie cutter where the contractors just know, go in and do this, go in and do this, go in and do this.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Very interesting. So we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to answer some questions from listeners who have sent them into vinoradio@gmail.com. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing, talking today about land development and construction with Mike Fry, president of Greater Dayton REIA, and Doug Simpson, who is a builder in Nashville and a member of the Real Estate Investors of Nashville. listeners, you should be aware that there's so much interest in this amongst folks that I think of as being real estate investors, and they go out and start building stuff instead, that the Real Estate Investors Association of Greater Cincinnati is launching a land development and new construction focus group next month. It's going to be on the second Tuesday of every month. It's going to be on Zoom, like all of the focus groups are. And it's going to be all about case studies. So Doug and Mike, you guys can expect phone calls from Steve Teffenhart, and Jason Miller. And then also folks who are kind of the service providers, you know, folks who do land development, folks who are in zoning departments, people mm-hmm. like that coming to talk to the group. So we have a question here. I apologize. I changed the screen, and now I have to go back to my email box. We have a question from Robert in Nashville. He says, why are most real estate investors scared of and shy away from development? For me, all these things about counties and codes and restrictions that seem to be a huge pain in the backside. Everyone I know in the developed business says it's way more predictable from the ground up on new development than it actually is on things like rehabs. With buy and holds not penciling like they used to, is development where we actually need to go? And where can we get more information and training on how to do that? Robert, I just told you, join Cincinnati RIA, and you can be in a focus group with other people who are learning about this every month. So the rest of his question, guys, is given that real estate prices have gone way up, have we gotten to the point where it makes sense to buy to hold or to build to hold as opposed to build to sell? They weren't ready for that one, Robert.
That's a tough one. And, you know, it's kind of the same issue as when you're buying to rehab and sell. It's all, the money's all made in the buy. So mm-hmm. if you're buying right, and then you're good at putting all these people together and all the logistics and the planning, and you get it all planned out front and the numbers work, it would make sense. I'm looking at doing it on a couple projects to mitigate taxes, maybe by keeping a property every now and then and holding them as midterm rentals mm-hmm. and designing it as a midterm rental. Mm. So I'm looking into it. I don't know yet if it's going to pencil out.
Well, and I suppose that would be an advantage to building it yourself, is a lot of the things that we do with properties, we end up having to adapt properties that weren't meant for that.
Right.
So, you know, a midterm rental, you know, if you're going to buy a house and turn it into a midterm rental, you're actually going to do quite a bit of work to it to, even if it's in good shape, to do that. And the other thing that pops to mind is group housing. That's a huge thing right now. And so many of the folks who are providing group housing are out looking for that unicorn 5 or 6 bedroom, 3 bath house. And then they have to put in hardwired smoke detectors and sprinklers. And it might turn out to be economically feasible just to build that instead. I would suspect that what the decision is going to come down to is what do existing rentals sell for per square foot in your area, and what can you build for per square foot in your area? Because if those numbers are close together at all, it probably does make sense to build so that you get your ideal whatever instead of buying something that somebody else built a long time ago.
And one other thought there is, if you're very knowledgeable in construction and you do that anyway, or you're rehabbing houses, it might be worth it if you're going to put your sweat equity into it. If you don't have the cash, but you've got the time, that may make sense for some people that are starting out. You know, as you get further along, you probably don't want to do that. But, for some people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, question from, and I got distracted there for a minute because I just want to remind listeners that we are live on the air on Wednesdays from 5 to 6 Eastern. If you're hearing this some other time, you're listening to a recording of the live show, And I say this because I got a question a full 24 hours after last week's show that was about last week's show. And please don't be offended if, you know, we don't answer that because you're actually listening to a recording. But we have a question here from Todd, which is, can you please ask the gentleman, when they do build, are they hiring a builder or are they hiring the trades out separately like a general contractor would? Doug, we'll start with you.
Oh, okay.
General.
I am a general contractor, so we hire our subs independently, and we manage all of that.
Mm-hmm. Is that
okay. General contractor.
Is that cheaper than hiring a builder? Because I know there's builders who will come build on your lot.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, I'm not sure what most of them are charging. I think it's around 15 to 20%. Do you know, Mike?
Yeah, that's what I've heard. That's the numbers I've heard, yes.
Mm-hmm.
15 to 20.
Yep.
Okay. So that brings us to, and Mike, you do the same thing?
Yes.
UGC, mm-hmm. Your own thing? Okay. That brings us to the next question from Lori. She says, I am thinking through this because I have also been considering developing a lot I own. And the thing I've been thinking is, who do I need on my team? An architect, a banker, a builder, somebody else?
Yes, yes, and yes.
Yeah. And many more.
and many more.
Yeah.
So, like, what people should she be out looking for before she gets too deep into this?
I work with my siblings, and one sibling, my sister, does all the interior design. We kind of collaborate on the designs in the beginning, and then send our ideas to an architect and let them draw it up. And then I have a brother that does the project management. I do all the excavation. And kind of the creative part of, you know, what are we going to do next and kind of the future stuff.
You get to play in the mud.
I that's my joy.
Okay.
I love doing that.
So interior designer, architect, possibly a project manager. Who else? Mike, who's on your team that you can't, couldn't do this without him?
Well, you know, having good relationship with contractors is extremely important, and having them be reliable, you know, having somebody who can maybe manage them it would be a thing. But I don't, you know, I'm thinking back to, you know, the original process. You're dealing with a lot of different people. Getting into the building project, the home building, I'm not that familiar with, but, you know, if that lot is already pre-developed and all the, you know, water, sewer, and everything is there, then she doesn't need any of those types of folks. But I would think that...
Mike, you said one early in the show that you're forgetting about. You had a mentor.
I did, yes.
That's like, I would never send somebody out to do their first anything.
Right, yes. So, yeah, no. In that particular case, I did. And I think that'd be very important to have a mentor, particularly depending on what she wants to do. You know, I look back on all the construction projects that I've been involved with, but not as a builder. And I think having a good relationship with the inspectors are very critical. And, you know, you made a comment on that.
Yeah. And I would also add just, the more you hang out with people who do the same thing, the more kind of community you have to, when something goes wrong, to go and say, okay, has anybody ever dealt with this before?
Mm-hmm.
And not have to figure it out for yourself. So.
Exactly.
Yeah. Lori, like, don't forget to get the people around you who kind of have the knowledge and experience to help you through the stuff that's not going to be in any book that you can ever read. About it.
Yep. I talk to a lot of other builders, and I'm probably bug them sometimes, but I'm always trying to learn from them and their mistakes. And there have been other builders on this hill. I'm watching a guy run a bobcat right now in front of me. And
tell him you want to go play in the mud.
Oh, it's killing me.
Go knock him off of there and say, no, this is mine.
Yeah, but I'm always talking to them. I'll help them out up here, and they help me. But you get a lot of good advice, and you avoid a lot of pitfalls if you just constantly talk to people. I also, anytime I see subs or, you know, a sign on a truck or whatever, I'm writing it down, taking a picture, you know, getting referrals, just constantly looking for subs and trying to build that list.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
that's critical. I do the same thing. I you know, stopped, saw a guy with a pretty well-equipped truck. He was doing siding at the time. And I got out and I said, hey, you know, I've got a property over here. I need to have some gutters fixed. Would you take care of it for me? And he said, sure. And, you know, I looked and he seemed to be pretty well equipped with everything he needed. And the truck looked nice and new. Turns out he was, I think we stayed together for about 3 or 4 years. Really good guy. He had to move out of the city for medical reasons, but, you know, it was just unbelievable, you know. And I basically just stopped and saw him on the side of the road. You know, he was fixing another property.
Hmm. Interesting. Yep. Comment from Todd, who... Remember where I asked about, you know, is it time to, Robert asked, is it time to build to rent? He said, he says, we started building affordable homes to rent back in 1994. New homes rent fast. And when they're located in great school districts, they draw families with kids who often stay very long term. We've had multiple families who rent the same home for 20 plus years, which creates great long term cash flow while the value of those properties double and triple.
Wow. I love that.
Yep.
Good.
So there's another opinion on buying to hold. Although I don't see a lot of people building what you would call affordable homes right now. And I've always assumed, and maybe you can comment on this, Doug, that it's because you can't actually make money building a home that's going to sell for $200,000 or $250,000.
I think the hardest part is finding a lot that makes sense for, because the lots are so expensive now that
right.
You have to what you can on that lot to make a profit. And if the city would allow a tighter, you know, much smaller postage stamp lots, you could build tiny houses, smaller houses, whatever, but nobody wants that in their backyard.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a conundrum. It's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One last question from Danny from Middletown before I ask you my wrap question, which is, she says, this is great information. If you had to say what the hardest part is, what the this might push me to become the motivated seller part is, what would that be? What resource would you have liked to have had and known about in the beginning?
I think hardest part for me is speed and staying, having momentum. I think the faster you can go and avoiding and keep cutting out all those things that you learn the hard way, like don't do this, don't wait on windows, keep, you know, get your process in order.
Mm-hmm. I think the same thing. It's you bump into something and at some point in time you go, okay, this is just enough. And then you sit and you push on and you go forward. It's kind of multiple steps you got to take and just keep pushing yourself to go to the next one and say, I can get through this, I'll get this done, and I got to go to something else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So just lot sounds like there's a lot of moving parts, and if any of them breaks, you could find yourself sitting there going, well, I don't know what to do until this gets fixed, and you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay, so... last question, and we only have a couple more minutes, for a listener who's been thinking about this and now they're inspired because you guys were just like them and then you started building commercial and residential properties, what would you say their first step would be? Like, what advice would you give somebody who walked up to you and said, I want to do what you do? Mike, we can start with you.
I would say that due diligence of where the property is located. Am I in an area where, let's say I'm going to do something that requires a lot of people and I want a lot of attention? and again, building at this, you know, outskirts of cities, and as it pushes out, as the development pushes out, I've selected something like that. the due diligence extremely important. If you plan on building a store in Lock and you don't do your due diligence, discover that there's three store in Locks within a mile and a half of you.
And they're all half empty.
And they're all half empty. You've made a mistake, yes. So you due diligence is probably the most important thing before I even begin any other process. I want to know what it is I'm going to be doing and where it is I'm going to be doing it at and how many people are going to be there to be the clients of what it is I plan on doing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Doug, your best advice for somebody who wants to start doing what you
do? Along, get somebody alongside of you to mentor or partner or to maybe go work for her first, you know? Maybe find somebody that's really crushing it and say, can I come tag along? You know, I'll work for you for a little while and mm-hmm. learn.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do for you so that I can learn from you? Okay, both great mm-hmm. answers, fellas, and appreciate your time here today. I want to remind listeners that the Land Development New Construction Focus Group at Cincinnati Area starts on the second Tuesday of February. You can get more information about that at cincinnatirea.com, and I hope to see you all tonight on Zoom for the Summit Investors Help Night on land trusts and entities. Again, you can get your free link to that at cincinnatirea.com. We'll be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.